No.
No intro music.
It's gone. I gotta hit it myself, that's all. Swear.
This is Haunted America with your host, Josh Mantello and Al Shepard on Blog Talk Radio. To discuss today's topics, call 646-716-5896. And now, Haunted America with Josh Mantello and Al Shepard.
Well, hey, Coach.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Haunted America Radio. My name's Al Shepard, joined as always by the rock star Josh Mantello. What's up, Josh?
Not quite. I have no musical. My musical ability is about as good as my psychic ability, so.
As we get older, we can always play the arthritis knuckles.
Oh, yeah, I can do that. Right now, it's my back that's playing tunes.
So I had to start the intro music myself. This is getting to the point where Blog Talk's going to have to start paying me.
Yeah, we're going to have to do something here. I wonder if we could get people to follow us and go to another provider. I don't know. our fans out there, they loyal enough, they're going to follow us around wherever we go.
That's a good question. We ought to throw that question out there. Email us and let us know what you think. If you just listen to us because you happen to stumble across us, or if we're actually the bipolar radio team's actually interesting enough to follow us around. Do we have any groupies?
You just might have one somewhere, I'm sure. I know I got a few people who like to listen regularly. I know. Mary down there in Atlanta likes to listen, and I don't know his regular name there. I see his screen name pop in on the chat room every now and then. UFO UK, he listens every now and then too. We got a few listeners who like to tune in regularly, and we get a pretty good amount of podcasts, so I can't complain.
Yeah, seems to be quite a few listening to the archive shows, which makes it more desperate for me when I want to hurry up and edit the show and get it up there before people start downloading it.
Yeah, well, that's the nature of things nowadays. Even live radio records their stuff and offers out podcasts now. It's kind of you got to do it to survive. You know, even the big FM transmitting radio stations, they all podcast their shows and everything now. Of course, most of them you got to subscribe to it, but it's, you know, that's the newest thing. Everybody's got the iPods and MP3 players, so, you know, everybody's doing that now, and, you know, I'm just as pleased as somebody podcasting and listening live, so it always gives them a chance to listen to the better version when you edit out all our I don't know, kookiness sometimes, I guess.
Well, and the thing is, there wouldn't be any editing if it wasn't for the technical problems of Blog Talk to begin with, because that's what all our problems always are. So, here I am paying $40 a month to use this service, and it just seems like it's creating more problems than it's worth. So, I'm seriously thinking about looking around, seeing where some of these other shows are hosting and what kind of deals they're getting, you know?
Yeah, maybe we should, maybe if you got Windows 7. It's supposed to be better. It'll make the computer work better. I don't know.
I don't think it's up because you're having problems and I'm having problems. So I'm thinking it's their infrastructure. Maybe they're just getting too big too fast or something. But maybe we ought to talk to Ron Kolick and a few of the others that have shows on different servers and see what they think.
Yeah, that's a possibility. the never know. They're doing well, and we'll shop around and see what's out there and what's offered. You know, I know a few people around, and so do you. And we never know. We'll be around one way or the other. We'll be doing a show from somewhere somehow.
Definitely. Be stay friends with us on Facebook or whatever, and Twitter and all that, and keep up to date, and we'll let everybody know if something happens.
I don't Twitter. I can say that. I'm on there. I signed up an account, but I logged in about twice. Of course, that's how I started Facebook, too. I got a Facebook and didn't use it for a year, and now I don't think I go a day without going on it three or four times a day now. So if I,
it's funny because I got 6 MySpace sites, and it was like a few months back, everybody was saying, they're all leaving MySpace and going to Facebook. And I'm like, Facebook is boring, you know? And then now all of a sudden I find myself, I haven't been on MySpace in weeks, but like you said, I'm on Facebook like twice a day at least.
You gotta harvest your vegetables every day.
That's addictive. That Farmville's addictive, I swear. So yeah, I'm usually that, and I log into my yearbook. I'm on that every day too.
What we gotta do is find a ghost hunting paranormal application now, and get everybody on that. Enough of the farm and cafe stuff. We need a good paranormal application. I bet you there's probably one out there.
Hey, well, wasn't it, was it Most Haunted or Ghost Hunters, the one that had download the ghost hunting application, turn your cell phone into an EMF detector or something? It was one of the live broadcasts of, maybe it was Ghost Hunters, I can't remember, but one of them, you could download this feature to turn your phone into ghost detecting gear, and I'm like, yeah, right. All right, I'm not hearing anything. Who dropped out, me or you?
Me now?
Now I can, now that I turned your mic back on. I'm sitting here talking to myself.
No, I got hung up on, so tonight might be one of those nights where I get hung up on 3-4 times in the first hour.
Just reinforcing what we were just talking about.
it was funny. I hear you talking, and I hear static. It goes, I get a bunch of static, and then my phone makes a little beeping sound saying I lost the call, and I got 4 bars on this thing, so I know I'm not losing my cell phone signal. But anyway,
like I was saying, I think it was Ghost Hunters, the live one of their live shows, or maybe it was Most Haunted, one of them, where download this program to your cell phone and turn your cell phone into ghost detecting equipment. Maybe we need something like that for Facebook.
Oh, there's a few things like that out there, actually. I should bring it up now. It's not kind of a bad thing to talk about for a few minutes here. The first one, I've heard of it, and I haven't seen it yet. And I don't have a phone with that capability. My next one probably will. Everybody knows, about, iPhones and how they have, an application for everything under the sun now on iPhone that you can download. I guess now Google is coming out with stuff for other smartphones besides iPhone. Downloadable applications for all these other touchscreen smartphones that are out there now. And I heard rumor that they actually had an EMF detector app for a cell phone. How it worked, I really don't know, especially since cell phones usually mess with EMF detectors and give you false readings. So I don't know how well and reliable a cell phone EMF detector will actually be.
Guaranteed to get a reading.
I guess, yeah. I haven't seen it. I think that'd be pretty cool. It's something I'd probably buy just to try. I don't know if it's something I'd keep a subscription to or not, but I'd at least download it once to see what it was. But you're talking about games. I know. Yeah, about 2 years ago, the guys from Taps actually worked with a company to develop a video game, and it was out there, and it was kind of a paranormal investigative game, kind of a first-person role-playing kind of game where you walk around and you can select from different equipment and go into different rooms and get different measurements and readings of different parts of whatever location you investigate. I know they had a mansion that you investigated. But an even better one, and I'm only saying this because I'm biased to it, I haven't played either, coming out on Halloween. I'll get all the details for next week's show before Halloween hits. There's actually a video game coming out. It's a relatively cheap download. It's a beta version, I think, that's going to be getting taken out. And it's a $5 download, but in this video game, you will actually play a new member of Berkshire Paranormal and investigate the Houghton Mansion for just as any other paranormal investigator would. They give you EMF detectors, EVP recorders. You get little learning sessions from the lead investigator, which originally was going to be me doing some voice, but I think they cut that out. I don't have a voice for video games, I guess. I don't know. But that's coming out on Halloween. If I can get to my computer's getting used by a couple other people right now, so I can't sit down at it and look it up. I'd have to get the webpage. Next week I'll have all the details though, but it's pretty cool. Like I said, they've actually gone down and we green screened, parts of the Houghton Mansion there, and video captured, different pieces of equipment in the rooms down there, and they hired an actress to play the new investigator in training for Berkshire Paranormal, and you get to join our group and investigate the Houghton Mansion on this video game. Should be a lot of, it's pretty interesting. I'm excited about it, at least excited to see it, and I think it'd be a lot of fun. Who knows? It might be better than going harvesting vegetables on the Farmville.
Definitely. I can't believe you kept this a secret for so long now.
Well,
how long has this been in the making?
To be perfectly honest with you, I completely forgot about it. This has actually been in the workings for just about a year now. I first met the developers first week of November last year, back in November of last year, and we were in communication with them here and there throughout probably October, late October, September of last year, too. The planning phase of it, and I actually thought they gave up on it and weren't going to do it anymore until last week, or a couple weeks ago, they got back in contact with another member of my group who's really doing the legwork on it. I really had a pretty limited role in this. I kind of let someone else be the front man on it, and I just found out last week, we're going down to take more pictures and get the final stuff done for the video game. I'm like, they're still doing that? So I did keep it a secret, but only because I had no idea it was happening. I completely forgot about it.
That's crazy. But yeah, I can't wait to see that, get a hold of it. And we'll have to get you on the local AM station for an interview there. You're a celebrity now.
Yeah, absolutely. This is our time of year to be celebrities anyways. Everybody will forget in a couple weeks.
Oh, man. So, yeah, I can't wait to hear about that. Okay, what's going on in the area for around Halloween time? What do you got up your sleeve?
Yeah, we still have the tickets on sale to investigate the Houghton Mansion with Dustin from Ghost Hunters and Ghost Hunters International. That should be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that. Those nights are always are fun for me, you know, kind of get a chance to hang out and do some investigating with everyone else and show off the building to a larger crowd. Dustin, I think, is one of the last few cast members that haven't been to the building for these types of events, and they're usually a lot of fun. Our tickets are $125 for the night. It's an all-night thing. We go to about 2 o'clock in the morning, and you get we have a presentation from Cece the Huntress, who is a paranormal investigator and does a lot of kind of independent videos and paranormal TV. A lot of her stuff is on YouTube, but she really did get a pretty good name for herself, and Dustin, everybody pretty much knows who he is. I'm thinking Halloween night for just for fun. I've gotten so many requests and phone calls from people asking to investigate the whole, or not to investigate, just to, you know, for tours. Everybody really wants to come down and tour the haunted building around this time of year, and with a new job that has my schedule, you know, mostly at night and all over the place, I haven't really been able to facilitate many, if any, of those tours. So I'm thinking Halloween night, after the kids get back in and their candy's all put away, I'm thinking by 9:30, I'm going to open the doors to the building and do a big group tour. Anybody who wants to come down, we'll charge $10 to get in, and we'll do a big, long, extended tour. We'll bring along some equipment. And, you know, we'll stay for a few hours and see if we can get some sort of activity to happen, you know. And, you know, it's something easy, low-key, you know, fun. People can get out. You know, they want to do a tour, then they can do it right there that night. The building will be open. I'll get, you know, some other investigators down there. And, you know, just go around the building on Halloween, because supposedly Halloween is supposed to be the night when the veil between our world and the afterlife world is lifted or is the thinnest, and that spirits can travel between the two realms the easiest. And, well, who knows? I've never really done a whole lot of real investigating actually on Halloween to really to make a judgment on whether or not that's true.
All right, you make sure type up something for me, just a little flyer or something, and give it to me, and I'll make sure I get it on the air down at work and let everybody know about it.
Yeah, it'll be it's a lot of fun. You know, anything down there is fun. Things always happen. You've been down there, and it's great. Another thing, actually, too, it's not something anybody can go to, and if you know, you have to go if you're in the Massachusetts area or the probably New Hampshire area, northern Rhode Island, northeastern Connecticut. If you're in the listening range of WAAF 107.3, 97.7, I believe, out of Boston, we will be investigating. We will be investigating the Houghton Mansion this coming Saturday with Chris Williams from TAPS, along with a few members of their morning show, and I guess a couple of listeners who won a chance to come investigate with them and have a sleepover at the Haunted Mansion. And it'll be recorded and probably played back over the air a couple of times over the week. So not this week, but next week. You know, if you're in that area, listen to the morning show there and on WAAF, and I'm sure you hear a few more bits of me and, you know, Chris Williams and all the members of the morning show there, and see what happens to them over the course of their sleepover.
Now, when's that one taking place?
It's happening Saturday night, but it's not going to be a live over the air type of thing. It's going to be recorded, and they'll probably play clips of it over the week, I would imagine.
So I'm just trying to. You got a busy week then, don't you?
Oh, it is, you know, but this is a busy week, and, you know, I guess the more popular investigator you are, the busier your week does get. You know, you talk to someone like Ron Kolick or Jeff Belanger, they don't have a free moment for the next 2 weeks, you know, and they haven't had one for the last three either. So, you know, for me, it's actually not as bad as it could be. I had had a speaking engagement I thought I was supposed to have up in up your way, and they said, yeah, they wanted me to come speak, and I kept emailing them to confirm the date, and they just completely stopped emailing me altogether, so I don't know what happened with that. I'm speaking at a Rotary Club on Tuesday. I got a couple other little things the week before, you know, little lectures and presentations about ghost hunting and the paranormal that a lot of people like to ask about, you know, the weeks leading up to good old Halloween. Oh, no, no, I think I lost Al. He might have gotten hung up on now. I heard him typing away there. He must be in the chat room, and he's gone. But I'm left, I hope. Unfortunately, one of the way we do this, I have no way of talking. Oh, you're back.
I'm here. I'm here. I had the microphone turned off. I forgot to turn it back on.
Oh, there it goes. All right, great. I looked it up today. I was thinking about our...
There you are.
Here I am. Or was I on the air, or were you on the air?
I have no idea. So I just kept talking, too, just I figured they could hear one of us.
Oh, good. Oh, one of us. Well, we'll see. You have to edit it, and whichever one sounds better, you can keep the other one throw away. So, Al, little debate. You think about it, because I know we were kind of going over this with the whole specialist thing. So I looked in a dictionary and got the definition of a specialist. So now, I think, see if I can end the debate here, and this can be the winning factor or not. The definition by dictionary only simply states a specialist is a person who studies in only one particular area of a subject. And that is it. The by definition, specialist doesn't include anything about specialized training, experience, or anything along those lines.
So in other words, as long as you study that part, you don't actually have to know anything about it.
You know, and they use, you know, and where I looked it up, they use the a doctor in particular. There's many facets and areas of science that fall, you know, under medical doctors. But a pediatrician only does children. A podiatrist is only feet.
But he knows how to treat children. He can't just say, I'm a pediatrician.
Right, because he's in that field. He's in the field, but now that's because that's a field that involves study and learning. What if it was a study of, what if I had a hobby and I like, you know, flowers, but I only like to grow roses. I specialize in roses. Because that's the field. There's, you know, I think I'm just setting us up for a debate, you know.
Yeah, this is going to be a good debate because you have to know your specialty. To be a specialist. You restrict yourself to that particular niche, but you train and are what's the word I'm thinking of, the competent or whatever in that particular area. You know, using your definition, you and I are radio show specialists.
Alright. So, you know, and that's just a run-of-the-mill definition. You know, you fall under a umbrella of one particular, of anything. It doesn't even have to be a science. It could be any hobby. It could be wood carving. You like to carve crosses over horses. So you specialize in those.
Yeah, but I wouldn't say that you're a specialist until you've figured out how to do it well.
Right, but by doing it more than any other part, so let's get back into our world here. Let's get back into the paranormal. The paranormal is a big umbrella. You know, if you really start thinking about every little aspect and area of study within the paranormal, there's a lot that can fall under it. Now, I could say, because the paranormal, by definition, is para, you know, over the normal. Anything that is above normal. You know, and not what you would normally see or experience. So, me and you could be considered, we specialize in ghost or spirit activity above that of cryptozoology and vampirism and the occult, right?
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Just my idea of a specialist is someone who's concentrated all their education and learning to a certain aspect and has become proficient. That's the word I was looking for earlier. Be proficient at it. And all I'm saying is you can take all the ghost hunting courses you want and learn this and learn that and learn this, but no one knows for sure whether you're learning the right thing or not. So therefore, you can't be considered proficient. You could be proficient in that certain way of doing something, but we have no idea if that produces any more results than any other way.
Oh, this is a great debate. And now you narrow it down even more. You know, like I said, you know, you have the world of the paranormal, which covers a lot more than just ghost and spirit activity. You know, like I said, you have cryptozoology, vampirism, the occult, metaphysical stuff, psychicism, remote viewing. It's a very large umbrella of things that fall under the paranormal. And now, I specialize, and even you can say you specialize in ghost activity. You could talk more on ghosts than you probably could on Bigfoot and Loch Ness. So that's your specialty. Now, we'll break this down even more. So now we're into the ghost world, and I think there's a lot of spots where you can specialize even more. I dedicated myself to more of spirit photography. So I am more proficient in talking about and lecturing on and teaching the pictures. That's my specialty. So if that's my specialty, that's what I special. You know, I think what happens is generally the only time you hear the word specialist is when you go to the doctor's office. You know, specialist is generally taken around a, the field of medicine, because there's so many different areas of study, you know, where you can get into and specialize in one particular. So I think maybe we've grown so accustomed to having that word used in such a well-trained profession that now it's almost became, you may think it needs to be more qualified than you are to be as specialized.
Okay. Do you consider yourself a paranormal photography specialist?
That's what I specialize in, yes.
But are you a specialist? So if I'm going to sit down and I'm going to hire you, Mr. Paranormal Photography Specialist, show me where you have produced more paranormal photographs than someone who is not a specialist.
I don't think but do results matter?
Well, I would say they do. If someone wants to claim that they're better at something than someone else, which is what specialist means, basically, is, you know, I'm specializing in this, so therefore I know more about it than the average general person, then you'd have to show me, since you can't really show me a diploma on the wall, you'd have to show me results. Say, all right, so prove to me you're a specialist. Show me where you've gotten more successful photos than someone else has.
No, but by definition, it doesn't have to be educated. All I have to say is that you concentrate in one particular area more than another. It doesn't say anything about having to be trained or educated or even
producing. This is like, what's the definition of rich? You know, to a person who makes $100,000, you know, a millionaire is rich. To a person who makes $1.98 a week, you know, someone who makes $100 a week is rich. So it's like you're leaving that definition awfully open-ended there.
Yeah, I know. But I figured we could kill at least a half an hour, and we have on this discussion.
Oh, I could keep going another half an hour if you want to.
and that's the thing, you know, and if anybody's actually listening out there, this all started about 2 weeks ago. If I didn't want to just pop it on to you so quickly, I would have let you know ahead of time that I was going to bring it back up again. But I wanted to kind of surprise you with a debate. You know, for those who don't listen regularly or this is your first time listening or you missed the show a couple of weeks ago, we got into the argument where there are ghost hunting groups and paranormal investigators who claim themselves to be specialists in certain things. I am a specialist in removing demons. I specialize in this. And that kind of a... drew a debate out of us there for probably a good hour of the show. And I just had to bring it back up tonight because I was thinking, for whatever reason, I thought of it today. And so I popped specialist into dictionary.com and got the definition so we could spark the debate just for a little while longer here. And basically, I mean, I even have two schools of thought on it. I would be weary of anybody who, I guess, if I go to their webpage and I'm searching out a group to investigate my home, and their group is full of specialists, there's even some people out there I've seen it's odd. They actually call themselves doctors, or doctors of ghost hunting. I don't know how you got that certification.
You can buy one of them mail order, I think.
Oh, you can do anything mail order now. A lot of them are, you can be an ordained minister now online. You know, you just print out the little collar and you're all set afterwards and you get a little diploma, the Internet Church of Christ or whatever it's called, and you're an ordained minister over the internet, and you take a little 10-question quiz where all the answers are probably right anyways, and you can't get one wrong. So
we ought to do that with ghost hunting. We'll start a website where you can just print out a little diploma and a little ghost hunter collar or something, and you know, pay us $49.95, and you can be an official ghost hunter.
Yeah, but you know what, Al? Somebody has already thought of it. That's been done. There are scams out there. It's amazing when I go off on these tangents and bring up one thing, and I have things in mind. We totally end up on different topics here, but that's why we call ourselves Bipolar Radio. Yeah, watch out for those. If you're new and you're trying to become a ghost hunter, don't think you have to go. And I'm not going to say that. I don't remember the webpage off the top of my head or the group that gave you these certifications. I don't remember who they were. And even if I did, I wouldn't even give them the pleasure of getting a plug on the radio, you know, for the five people that might go from our show and look at it. You know, and that's exactly what they did. You would go online to their webpage. You would pay them money. They had these little courses, these little things they would show you on the screen, and sure enough, you would get a diploma saying you were now a certified ghost hunter. And then they had mail order DVDs and lessons, stuff you could do through the mail. I'm sure some of the information that they are putting out there is worthwhile information. I'm sure they're not teaching you completely idiotic techniques. I personally never bought any of the software or took any of the tests or tried to become, as they call it, a nationally certified ghost hunter. But there's so many better ways to do it. There's so many better ways to learn. I mean, go to Mark Nesbitt's online. Pay him. I can guarantee you, pay and go to Mark Nesbitt's online conference. You won't get a cool little diploma that says you're a certified ghost hunter, but you will you'll learn probably more and get some more out of it.
Yeah, I mean that was what started the whole conversation weeks ago. Is I'm not against anyone learning, you know, all these different things and go to as many conferences and conventions and classes and lectures as you can and soak up all this learning. But all I said was, at this point in time, no one knows what's the right way and the wrong way. So, you know, 10 years from now, you could find you've been learning all the wrong stuff because that isn't the best way to do it. But no one knows for sure, you know?
Yeah, you're right. Hey, but, you know, back in the day, there were, you know, doctors were specialists in using leeches to suck the bad blood out of you, too, you know?
Well, you know, they still do that with maggots and stuff.
Yeah, but they don't. They do it for a totally different reason. Wow, your phone just made a noise that sounded like a cow, but I don't know if you could hear that over the radio. But
my phone made a noise that sounded like a cow? I think that was my daughter in the background.
No, don't tell her I said that then.
Anyway. Oh, that's funny.
So we're getting into Halloween now, and everybody loves ghosts, and everybody loves the paranormal, and all of a sudden we're the cool kids on the street and not the weird ones that walk around in the dark. That'll be next month again. And everybody also wants to be friends with the people who know how to hunt ghosts for a couple weeks. But, you know, the topic always kind of comes up, you know, this time of year, especially I hear it a lot because I do the tours at a haunted location. You know, is it true, and I'll get the question a million times, is it true that you get more ghosts on Halloween than you do any time of year? And for me, I've never seen any difference. I've never had more ghosts or more experiences in the month of October and the weeks leading after. I never seen it kind of decrease and then peak again as we got closer to this time of year. I know you've, I'm sure you've heard it. I referenced it a little while ago. You know, the supposedly the veil between the afterworld and our world is supposed to be at its thinnest, and the spirits can come through easier now than at any other time of the year.
I personally don't believe it. I don't know. I mean, I don't know the complete history on Halloween, but I know it comes springs out of a religious belief that leaving food out or giving or something about monsters coming to the door or something, demons coming to the door and giving them some food or something so they go away and leave you alone or something, but if you didn't, then they do all kinds of stuff to you or something. But it was all based out of a religious belief.
And that's true. Yep, I hear my echo again. But when you research it and you look it up, there's a lot of different versions. But that's because throughout history, all religions and all people have, all religions and all people before your big modern religions followed the earth and its changes and its happenings and how the atmosphere and everything happens. They were earth-based religions. And even Christianity nowadays and Catholicism, even now, still adopts the old pagan ways. Believe it or not, you know, the Catholic will argue with you tooth and nail about it for the rest of their life, saying they're not. But, you know, your major Catholic and Christian holidays are all based on original pagan holidays. Now, the most more accepted and widely known version of Halloween and how it came about was from the Celtics of Ireland. It actually started in Ireland, in that area, and the Druid nomadic people and any of the more I guess you want to call them earth religions, paganism. A lot of it's more modern-day witchcraft. And it all starts, one, and like I was saying, all these religions really base themselves on the changes of the earth and the seasons and the time of year. So everybody kind of knows this time of year now as, you know, the harvest time, you know, the time just before winter. It's starting, you know, the nights are getting longer, and things are going like that. So basically, Halloween started as the time of celebrating the end of summer and the start of winter. The start of the time when your long, warm summer days are gone and you're preparing for the long, long nights and cold days of the winter time, and it's also a time of celebrating the year's worth of harvesting. So, go ahead, Al.
No, go ahead. I'm listening.
No, it sounded like you had something to say. No, it sounded like you were going to say something. next thing was, it did start to incorporate in the afterlife. This is where the whole veil between the two worlds is the closest. This was the beliefs of these cultic religions and in modern day witchcraft and some different sects of it. There's different versions of witchcraft. They too believed, you know, that the worlds were the two closest. And now this here is where we start getting our costumes and getting our jack-o'-lanterns. Unlike Easter, where you have an Easter bunny, and nobody really knows where we got the idea of how remotely incorporates with the thought of the Easter holiday. But these actually do have pretty meaningful symbolism behind them from the original meanings behind the holiday, and not just have kids go out at night and collect candy. So at this time, on that day, you know, the two worlds are at their closest. But not only for the spirits to come through, and evil spirits and friendly spirits alike, and particularly family. So Halloween started to become a time for the families to take out their harvest for the year, their last harvest, and create a big dinner and have a big party to celebrate their deceased family members who can now pass through more easily with the thinner veil between the two worlds. But not only the family members can go through, so can your evil and mean spirits. So to scare off the evil and mean spirits, this is where the jack-o'-lanterns came from. They would take hollowed-out gourds and pumpkins and squash and use those to help scare off the evil spirits. And then, secondly, they actually would dress in costume so that only a true family member would know who they were, and that the costumes would be scary enough that the evil spirits would think they also were an evil spirit or be scared away from their scary costume they put on, and had to keep the evil spirits away, invite friendly family spirits in, and you have a big family reunion on Halloween night.
Okay, I knew I saw something about it. I don't know if it was on History Channel or what, but I couldn't remember the whole thing. But now, you've had me thinking of the Easter Bunny ever since you mentioned it, and I still haven't figured that one out.
We can go into other religions. I'll bring this up quickly. It kind of falls under the paranormal stuff. It isn't. It's kind of on the fringe of paranormal, I guess. All your holidays, especially a lot of your major Catholic and Christian holidays, do fall around your original Celtic holidays. Anybody who hasn't seen it, I recommend you go watch at least the first hour of the movie called The Zeitgeist. You can get it online. You can watch it on YouTube. You can go to zeitgeist.com and buy it. If anybody has seen that and you grew up in a Christian or Catholic house, you're going to completely question everything you were taught growing up and how you were pretty much had the wool pulled over your eyes and you were told lies for a long time. Every major religion, every major civilization through time had a figure that was born in December of a virgin mother. And not just Catholics. The Egyptians had a figure that was born of a virgin mother on December 25th and then died and rose 3 days later. The Celtics had one. The Romans, or your pre-Roman people, your people, the civilizations of South America, the Mayans, all these civilizations dating back thousands of years before Christ, all had a figure who was born, died, and raised in the same manner. The Celtic people, I can't say Celtic, Celtic's more Irish, the people who, the civilizations who had the more of the earthy religions and the pagan religions of early Rome and the areas where civilization really came up. December 25th was a holiday for them. It had always been. Basically, the Catholic Church wanted to make the 25th a holiday so that it would be an easier transition for them to study and learn a new form of religion without having to learn all new holidays. So basically, we don't have to learn new dates, we just have to learn new reasons why this day is important.
Okay. So, I'm just trying to think of a holiday here. So like Columbus Day, before it was Columbus Day, it was probably happy swine flu day. I don't know. But
oh, we're not talking about your Columbus days, your Memorial days. You know, your days, you know, a lot of them, you know, your Christmas, your Easter, those ones. Now, this all really falls into the same thing. With it, and you got to go watch this movie. If you have Al, you'll watch it, and you'll come back to next week, and you're gonna say you are absolutely right. That was amazing. I haven't watched the whole thing. I only watched that first half hour that deals with religion. And basically, the 25th falls right near the winter solstice. It's the day of longest. It's the shortest day of the year by light. You have more night than you do day. From that point on, the days start getting longer. And the sun is the lowest in the sky. The sun starts to rise again and come higher in the sky right around the time of Easter. So the sun starts to rise, or the Son of God rises on Easter. You know, I can't really get into it all exactly. I don't remember. It's been a while since I watched it, but it is kind of a paranormal documentary. You should definitely watch it. You'd think a little differently about a few things.
Yeah, what was the name of it?
The Zeitgeist.
Okay.
I'll have to email it.
I mean, I started thinking differently the minute I watched The Secret. So,
a lot of the people I know who watch The Secret were also big fans of Zeitgeist. It's one of those things, you know, and it gets into a lot of, after the religious stuff, I started getting a lot of government conspiracies and stuff like that. I'm just not into there's a few people I've shown the movie to, and they watch, and they said, oh my God, you know, they start watching it thinking, yeah, this is going to be a whole bunch of crap, you know, propaganda, whatever. And then they watch it, and it's just, you know, that makes absolute sense. You know, it makes perfect sense. With the way they put it to you and show it, it makes absolute sense.
Yeah, I'll have to do a search for that one, then. That sounds interesting. When I first watched The Secret, you know, I was watching that, and they're talking about the laws of attraction, the power of the universe, and all that, and it really made me think. But when you start thinking about religion, you can't help but start thinking about heaven. So if my thoughts on religion were wrong, then are my thoughts about the afterlife completely wrong as well, you know?
Right. Well, that's what's weird. You know, especially in what we're doing, we're in the realm of the paranormal and, you know, and ghost hunting. Now, I haven't really gotten into this debate, but I've talking to quite a few people in the ghost hunting field who've had this debate, and you know, and they say they'll get and talk to a Catholic who will, you know, true by Catholicism, you know, there is heaven and there is hell and there is no in between. So hence there is no ghost or spirit activity, because you either go to A or you go to B. You do not pass go, you don't collect $200.
Do you still get out of jail free?
Huh? Well, maybe. That'd be good to know. I looked at $200, though, first.
My daughter said you need to get out a jail-free card, though.
Yeah, who knows where you get those. So
probably get it from your priest.
Maybe. I don't know. Who's giving all them that you get out of jail free cards?
The government.
but anyway, so we have ghosts supposedly coming closer to us now more than any other time of the year. Have you had any kind of, I don't know, I guess, what do you, I mean, anybody listening or you, Al, have had any, say, more spiritual encounters now than, say, you would have 6 months ago, which would be, say, the exact opposite of this time of year?
Boy, I haven't really had one at all anyway, so I can't answer that.
Well, anybody in the chat room kind of want to type up on it?
The chat room seems to be somewhat asleep tonight. There's a few guests in there that, haven't registered. That's why their name is guest. And if you haven't registered, I don't think you can type in the chat room. So I take it they're listening, but can't actually type in. Well, you
feel
can
free
call,
to call in.
In.
No, dude, you beat me to it. I was going to say that. Feel free to call in and weigh in on it. Because that's something that I would really like to look into more and more on the subject is, are these groups or have anybody, you know, maybe given a little bit more study to the fact that there might be more activity now than any other time of the year?
I would think if that claim's going to be made, then someone would have had to have some statistics somewhere to base that on, but not that I've ever heard.
Or how about this? I had a thought right in the front of my mind, and I lost what it was. How would you set up that experiment to do that? How would it have to be a continual every night of the week? You got to go down and get readings. Say I have a haunted location at my disposal, and I take an hour a day every day for a year. And I go to the most haunted room of that building every night, and I do 10 minutes of EVP recording. I monitor EMF the entire time. I take a bunch of pictures from the same location, and I write a detailed log of every bit of personal experience that could remotely be construed as a paranormal experience. You know, and then go over the course of the year and chart it, you know, peak it, you know, does it rise, does it fall, you know, it'd be a great idea if you could actually have the time to do that, I think.
The first thing that popped into my mind was the database, I believe it was Michael Baker's putting together,
yep.
Where all the groups can kind of all throw their stuff in there together, and when that is all looked over, then you might be able to get some type of national trend and be able to say, yeah, there's a lot more reports on this date than another. I don't know how you do it on a certain, you know, a single place like yours, if, like you said, unless you were there every single day, 365 days a year. But then that could be a weird year, too. So then you'd have to be there 365 days the next year and the next year and the next year till you'd get valid data for that one particular place. So I think it really needs to be a nationwide thing where you've got more groups out there all the time to be able to come up with some type of valid statistic.
Yeah, but I think the more important part, because that you're dealing with different locations at different times. I would think to have it be a true perfect study, it would have to be one location, this exact location, all every day.
Yeah, but then you're getting back to, okay, first of all, prove to me it's haunted to begin with.
There we go.
So, I mean, we've, like we've said on other shows, we've never been able to come up with enough evidence to persuade us, you know, the most skeptic persons. So anybody could find flaws with that logic too, I suppose.
All right. Yeah, I think that's a great point. I suppose before we do anything along those lines, then we would actually have to prove that there is such a thing as a legitimate haunting. Now, right now, everything's really based on perspective, right? I mean, I've been in locations that I can guarantee in my own mind and to the people who live there every day and experience and deal with this stuff that it is haunted. But a person who is a devout non-believer, and no matter what you tell them that you saw, heard, and felt, they will always tell you there is no such thing as a ghost, right?
Yeah, right up until the point when they see one for themselves. When something happens that they cannot, maybe I can't even say that. I was going to say, when something happens that they cannot come up with any other scientific logical explanation for, but then there are people out there that even then will still say, okay, there's a logical explanation, I just don't know what it is.
I just don't know what it is, right. So, how do we do it? How do you prove a haunting?
You know, I don't know if you, to certain individuals, I don't know if you ever will. Until they're actually died and crossed over themselves, and then maybe you can, maybe that's what we need to do, is find the most skeptic person in the world, and when they die, just constantly try to contact them. And then get it right from their mouth and say, here you go.
All right, and that might be what it'll, but then there'll be the, the person they leave behind as the biggest skeptic to still doubt that you're talking to them.
Yeah, it's one of these things, you're probably never going to wind up on the right side of it. So, I guess we just keep preaching to those that will listen and don't waste our time in those that won't.
Right. We hit our 8 o'clock hour here. Do you want to run your commercials?
Well, actually, it's a perfect segue. I was just going to say that my leader in Send Out Cards told me exactly the same thing the other day. It said, don't waste your time on people that don't see it, that don't get it. He says, and concentrate all your time on the people that do. So. Yeah, perfect segue here.
Send Out Cards is one of the greatest tools available to follow up with your customers. We call it relationship marketing. Now, you've probably heard that phrase before. True relationship marketing is about reaching out and genuinely caring about that customer or client. They don't care about what you're offering. They care that you care about them. When we talk about relationship marketing, we talk about sending a greeting card out to a customer with a genuine heartfelt message in it, in your own handwriting. That's what true relationship marketing is all about. We've designed a system and sent out cards that helps you do just that. In fact, you choose a greeting card, type in a message, push the send button, and our company will print that card, stuff it, stamp it, and mail it out for you. If you'd like more information on this amazing system, call Alan today.
Calls for another one. I think some week I'm just going to sit here and just play an hour of Nickelback and call it a show. I just can't get enough. Anyways, if you want more information on working from home like I do with this soon-to-be household name called Send Out Cards, you can email me at ncognito66@comcast.net or give me a call, 516-422-5379, or find me on Facebook or MySpace or My Yearbook or this one or that one or who knows where else. Something I had to announce. Last week we had Patty Wilson on the show, one of our guests, and she sent me an email about an event called, the website is ajourneyofhope.org, and what it is there's a paranormal event which is helping to raise money for granting wishes to terminally ill people that have life-limiting illnesses. This event is going to be November 20th and the 21st, Farmington, Pennsylvania, at the historic Stonehouse Inn. Guests include Steve LaChance, and I got an antivirus program that just popped up in front of my face, Jan Pierce, Keith and Sandra Johnson, Lizzie Starr, Kristen Gartland, Chris Deadman, Denise Jones, John Zaffis, and Chip Coffey, all in one place at one time. So, tickets are $189 for the two-day event. Meet and greet Friday night with question and answer panel, two buffet dinners each evening, and a Saturday brunch. And proceeds are going to Unity, A Journey of Hope, which grants wishes to people that are kind of like the Make-A-Wish, I guess, for people who are terminally ill. All donations are 100% deductible, and they're having a giveaway for an autographed guitar, autographed by Brooks and Dunn and Trick Pony and Bucky Covington and Kelly Lynn and all kinds of people. So, and if you win, you get your choice of the guitar and $250 or $500 cash. It's up to you. Tickets are $3 a piece. So anyways, go to A Journey. Yeah, where is that address again? ajourneyofhope.org, or I think that redirects you to unityajourneyhome.com. So either one of them will get you where you want to go. So I told Patty I'd make sure I mentioned that. All right. Yeah, it is. Chip Coffey, John Zaffis, Kristen Gartland. There's a whole bunch of them going to be there. So, and
I've seen I can definitely say I've seen Kristen talk many times. I've seen John talk just as many times, and tell you what, we talk every week about, you know, learning how to be a ghost hunter and learning how to get into paranormal investigating. There you go, right? You'll learn more sitting down and listening to those two talk for 2 hours than you probably would have learned the entire time you've listened to our show. So,
that's not hard to say. You could watch episodes of SpongeBob and learn more than you learn by listening to our show.
Oh, I don't know about that.
But, yeah, Kristen's a member of TAPS, and I believe she gives classes down there at TAPS headquarters or right
That's
around
right.
in that area quite often.
She does do the Ghost Hunting 101 for the TAPS family and everything at their home base down there at Warwick or West Warwick. I don't remember. But, yeah, she does all their Ghost Hunting 101 stuff. Great girl, too, to meet. And John, he gets that side that a lot of us don't want to know about too often. Let me tell you something. After hearing his speech, and I haven't heard his more recent one, and I know he's changed it. I remember they always joked around a lot. John's been talking for 20 years, and his speech hasn't changed a bit. So...
Demons are still there.
I guess he has changed it around a little bit. He has a newer one that I haven't seen it yet. So I'm looking forward to the next chance that I do get to see it and meet him. But some of the stories he tells, it really makes you wonder about what we're doing here and why we're doing it. And do you really want to take... You know, you hear about, you know, the ghost hunting and how much fun it is to walk around in the dark, but you start hearing the stories he says about some of these people he's dealt with in possessions and exorcisms, and you can't help but be nervous and a little bit scared about the stuff we might end up having to deal with if we come across it on accident someday.
Yeah, doesn't he have a museum of some sort at his house or something?
He he built a bigger, it's like a barn now. I think it's a paranormal barn. I don't remember what they call it exactly. But yeah, he takes haunted possessions off of people. I mean, sometimes people will have these items that they don't want because they're haunted items. Grandfather clocks and cuckoo clocks that will only work at certain times of the year and a lot of stuff like that. And he's taken a lot of these possessions and has put them in his museum. I don't know if he displays them, but he did commandeer a few items from the Houghton Mansion.
Now, why would that be? There are items you didn't want around there anymore?
Yeah, there are items we had excess of and couldn't get rid of them, and you wanted them, so here you go, John, they're all yours.
Okay, I was going to say, if it was something that was an item that was really haunted, I'd think you'd want to keep it around, so.
I don't really think they were haunted items, so I don't. That's why I don't think he displayed them. A lot of them are old Templar and Commandery swords and uniforms that I just think he thought they looked cool, so he wanted one. I don't know if he wears it or not.
Well, that'd be cool. Yeah, we'll have to get a hold of him, tell him we want to see him in some of that stuff. I sent you an email. You got a... Look it over, make any edits and additions and changes, and get it back to me.
Ooh, okay. When I get to my computer, I will show it to you. I'll do it.
Very good. Okay, we got, another 45 minutes left. So what's next on the agenda here?
Well, let's just see how long we can be quiet.
Okay. Yeah, this will be like that. What was it? Howie Mandel show or something? You know, where the guy gets up and goes to the bathroom, and then he says to the audience, okay, everybody hide.
Right, yeah. Actually, kind of brings up a, I had another topic in mind. It's already kind of, I've already kind of lost interest in it in my head before I've even brought it up. But
well, good, then. It's ought to be sure to bore us, then.
Yeah, it does. But I just, you know, we talked about, you know, John's Museum there and haunted items. That, I think, on a few cases I've been on, and I know a lot of other people have in cases, where not even so much the location is haunted, but they really do have haunted items. And for whatever reason, the haunting evolves and revolves around this particular item. Or, in the same aspect, could you consider a house a piece of property just as much as, say, a grandfather clock? There's tons of stories about grandfather clocks or dolls. So there's always some, we always hear weird stories about a possessed or haunted doll. I mean, I know people who refuse to even be around dolls, especially, you know, the older porcelain ones. They refuse to be around them completely in the dark because they're so, they're petrified of them.
Now, I don't know, maybe I lost something in the translation here. Petrified of what now?
Dolls.
Dolls.
Dolls. D-O-L-L-S.
Okay. You mean kind of like the things that you leave laying around in the closet at the Houghton Mansion and you come across in the dark?
Yeah, I mean, maybe not in particular your modern day, you know, baby dolls that wet themselves and you have to feed type of stuff, but more your older porcelain ones that, you know, they you know, look realistic. And there are a lot of stories about particular items. A lot of times they are dolls. You hear a lot about grandfather clocks. And I know, I'm pretty sure there's one in John's Museum, you know, a grandfather clock that will only work once a year. For whatever it starts working for that short period of time and then doesn't work again.
Okay.
You know, how do you, and, you know, and this kind of is what's odd for me. I can hear myself in the background. Oh, it's annoying. I don't like the sound of my own voice.
Heck, you ought to hear yourself in the front.
anyways, if you have these such haunted items that do things at particular times or have a particular power, then how come they're not so well documented, that they're not in a college, you know, being studied, or a regular museum, you know, a museum of science, and being studied and looked at more in-depthly?
You're asking me?
Okay, you got to have an opinion.
Good question. I really don't have an answer why they're not. I mean, if you've got a clock that only works once a year, you can bet that I'd be all over that thing trying to figure out, you know, when you know that day is coming, if it does it on cue, you know it's coming. I'd have more meters and cameras and everything surrounding that thing, just watching it, just waiting. I don't know.
And now this also kind of begs the question, what makes something haunted? What makes a house haunted? What makes a particular item haunted? We kind of talked about a little bit last week, you know, what makes Gettysburg haunted? And, you know, is it the mass amount of tragedy and death and that did it? Or was it the geology of it? You know, the type of minerals and stones that are in the ground? Or is it, you know, what was it that did it? Now, when we talk about an item, a particular item that may be haunted, now you can't use that theory or that thought of the geology of the land and the makeup because it's an item. It would be haunted in my house as much as it would be haunted in your house or a museum or the middle of the road.
Yeah, and that was brought up last week. I was thinking, I might believe the geology theory as far as a residual haunting, that maybe, you know, its energy is trapped and it just escapes every now and then, and that's when you get this movie that's replayed over and over and over again. But I don't see where it has any correlation to an intelligent haunting unless the certain minerals kind of create like the right vibration to open a doorway of some sort, maybe.
All right. So now I'm thinking, I know, it's an experiment I'm going to do. I just haven't had the location and the time or place to do it. I talked about it a couple months back, and it's going to be my great psychic experiment. Everybody kind of, you know, who's listened kind of knows my view on psychics and their ability and how, and I don't totally disbelieve in it. I disbelieve in more of the people than I do than the ability. I believe there's a lot of people who claim the ability when they really don't have it or exploit it in ways that it really shouldn't be exploited. But my experiment is going to evolve around haunted items. I've got somebody who has items that they feel are haunted. And what I'm going to do is it's going to be a blind test. And I'm going to invite anybody to come and take part in this. People with or without psychic ability, because I think it'll also have a great opportunity to have people who maybe think they aren't psychic to maybe see that they do have some sort of ability, if such ability exists, because this is where I'm going to try and get at with this. I'm going to lay out these items that are haunted and have backgrounds and have meaning. Some of them may not have a haunted history to them, but some of them might have a particular meaning or something behind it that a psychic should be able to pick up on. Some are said to be haunted and have ability, and some just might be a random object that's all it is. It's just a random object. There's 10 objects. Each one, you pick it up, you hold it while you're blindfolded. You go back and you write and say, while I held this, I felt that, I think this is just a random object, I think this is a object that was used in a murder. And we'll go from there. I think it might actually, you know, it falls along these lines of talking about haunted items and maybe how they get to be haunted, if there's a story behind it. Maybe the psychic can pull it out and see, you know, is it a spirit that's attached, or just maybe a very highly concentrated amount of energy or something that was kind of entrapped into it?
Now, my question, going back to the grandfather clock, now obviously it did this funky stuff at the original people's house, so John took it home with him. Now, is it still doing it at John's house? That would be my first question. Or did it stop?
Well, I can't really speak for sure, because I
you know, if it's still doing it, If it's not doing it at his house, then my thought would be, well, maybe there is something to the geology under the building where it originally was, you know, and that would give a little more credence to that theory.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like your test just as a let's see if you're psychic or not. You know, if you can get some items where 2-3 confirmed reputable psychics hold this item and all come up with the same answer, and then set it down, you know, and let other people come along and see what they pick up. And the ones that come up with the right answer, I would say, would be candidates for further exploration as far as their own personal psychic abilities. So I think that would be a kind of...
You could
even do this online. Because I know I spoke with a few psychics who were, you know, the ones that were on the show a couple of weeks ago, who are able to do readings from people typing in questions in the chat room. All they need is their name, and they can focus in. So you could actually just put pictures of these items on the internet and have people look at them and see what they get, and it'd be interesting to see how many of them match what the confirmed psychics come up with.
Yeah, but I think for my initial run on it, I wanted to be completely blind. Because, one, some of these objects, I could think of two off the top of my head that I want to use. Just the look of them alone would be suggestion. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, but it still wouldn't give you details.
But sometimes, you know, some of these fake psychics, your TV psychics, you know how they work. All they need is a small clue to get in. You know what I mean?
Yep.
They just need that one small clue to get in and then just go from there with it. And I don't think, you're blindfolded. And you can hold it, you can touch it, but you're blindfolded. You're not going to see anything on it that is going to give you any sort of hint as to what it is and what it was used for in the past.
Yeah, okay.
Now, I think, you know, like you said, this would be great for people to say, oh, maybe I do have some sort of ability. I got 4 out of 5 right. I got 8 out of 10 right. I picked it up and I said, oh, this was just a blade of grass, and I picked it up and this here was a gun used in a murder. This was a wife's wedding ring that was, anything, that would have a sentimental value attached to it or something along those lines.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, is I'd be looking for more details. You know, you couldn't just pick it up and say this gun was used in a murder. Well, gee, that's unique. You know, give me specifics. You know, a guy shot a woman shot a guy. Give me more specifics before I'd really consider it a right-on answer.
All right, so now let's take the results and what we're going to do with the results. So now we helped a person say maybe they have an ability that they didn't have before. But now let's think, what if we had 20 people come in, and out of those 20 people, 18, 19 of them were all right, blindfolded. And they said, this was something that, in your first time out, I want to maybe even want exact details. They're blindfolded, and they can say, wow, I see death associated with this. That's all I need. This has death associated with it. This has nothing associated with it. This has happiness associated with it. And what if we got 18 out of 20 people who were able to actually get that close?
That'd be interesting. But like I said, it depends how close you want them to get, though.
a quick little story off of it. One of the items I know I'm going to use, and here's the story behind it. A friend of mine is a collector of World War II artifacts, and a lot of them. A very rich collection. Stuff that's very valuable from both sides of the war, particularly in Europe. And he has a friend. He just got a new item, and he goes, "Here, why don't you check this out?" He handed his friend the item, and his friend instantly went into like a panic. He couldn't touch it. He's like, "Get it away from me! This thing is horrible. This thing is horrible. I don't want to touch it. I don't want to be near it. Get it away from me." He didn't know what it was.
I'm picturing a bayonet in my head.
It wasn't a bayonet. It was a hand carved club that was used in the concentration camps to kill the Jews in the concentration camps by beating them upside the head.
Jeez.
So, now this item I'm going to throw in there. Now, I know certain psychics who have the ability who will probably beat me with it after I make them touch it because they'll have that, here's a guy who's not psychic and has this type of experience touching it. And I imagine the psychic who touches it, who has a higher sense of, a higher sensitivity, they'll probably throw it at me or something afterwards. Oh, maybe I won't use it.
Yeah. Well, if they're that sensitive, they'll probably get within 5 feet of it and won't have to touch it.
Right.
I can see this as a cool test of adults, but then I'd like to see it done with children to see if the ratio of right answers is higher with kids. Of course, you'd have to have items that aren't so gruesome, but 'cause it's always been said that kids have that, like they're all born with a psychic ability, and then they lose it over time. I wonder if you'd be able to prove that with a test such as what you're talking about, that they get a higher correct scores than adults would.
Well, I think, too, you open it up to everybody, and you open it up to not just psychics. You open it to the general public, and maybe you'll see, more of the general public has somewhat of that ability still left in them, no matter how much it's been suppressed.
I can see you setting up a display at the museum with like 10 items in it, and almost like a Chinese auction box or so. In front of each item is a little box, and here's a pad of paper. Now, write down the feelings that you get about this item. Write down your name and your phone number or whatever. And write your answer and put it in the box. And about once a week, you go through the box, you clean it out, and you see who's right, and then shoot them a little email telling them, you might want to go find some psychic classes.
Yeah. And, of course, I don't know. We'll see. I'm sure I'll still find some way to look at it and say, I'll say I rigged my own one, for crying out loud, the way I get some days.
Well, I think that would be a kind of a cool test, just to see what kind of answers you get. I'd be interested in that, just to see how much of the general population has psychic abilities that they don't even realize, because they're not tested on a daily basis,
Right, and that's really the whole meaning behind it.
Now you got me thinking of different ways.
So if anybody has any haunted items out there, they would like to donate to the purpose, and wouldn't mind parting with it for a short period of time, let me know.
I'm sitting here, and it's funny because I was just thinking that same thing just before you said it. I'm kind of scanning around the house here just to see what I had that I even know the history of,
Hmm. Now think of it this way. What about, an item from a house so now you don't have a haunted item, but you take an item out of a house that is haunted and you take it to another location. Would it maybe still have, would it hold the energy? I guess, it's like, we kind of been hinting around it here for like the last half hour. You know, what makes something haunted? What makes a house haunted? What makes a clock haunted, or any, or an open field at Gettysburg? What makes them haunted? And honestly, it's kind of a question too. You know, we're doing all this so-called paranormal research, trying to document the what, but I don't think anybody's really trying to look into the how.
And that's it. If you can figure out the how, then you'll be able to recognize the signs that point toward something occurring at a certain place or at a certain time, which would help you with your documentation and proving that it does happen. So I would think the how would be where you'd want to concentrate on. And, you know, I mentioned I read Sarah Estep's book where she spent 20 years doing EVPs with people that have already crossed over. And that's why that interests me, is they can give you information that you can't get anywhere else. And if that's, you know, information is true and verifiable, then man, that would help you considerably, you know?
Yeah. Oh, God, my brain is slippery today. I had one I was going to just think about it. I just wanted to say, what was it? I hate it when it happens. But, you know, we start thinking more towards the how and not the why. Or actually, the how and the why are okay. I'm trying to think of the right words. We would know where to look a lot easier. And I think everybody, myself included, and I don't think you can find a single paranormal researcher who at some point hasn't said this same line, you know, it must be haunted. In this time of year, you get it a lot, you know. You know, kids breaking into cemeteries, or kids going to, you know, old abandoned houses or something and getting caught trespassing. And why are you going there? Well, you know, it's almost Halloween, and we think it's haunted. And it's like, well, why do you think it's haunted? Well, it should be. It's a cemetery. It's an old Indian burial ground. It has to be.
Yeah, and all the logic is that that's a place where you store dead bodies so they can rot. I mean, the spirit isn't there anymore. So why does a cemetery have to be haunted? You know.
Yeah, and not even that. What about, you know, the old creepy building down at the end of the road? Oh, it must be haunted. Why? That looks creepy. Or that hospital. You know, you have a lot of old Massachusetts. Had tons of them. You know. The old asylums, you know, around Massachusetts, there was, God, I can think of at least four or five of them. They're all shut down now, but they were gigantic buildings built in Gothic style, so they looked creepy, and then they were an asylum on top of that. You know, crazy people live there. It must be haunted, right?
Well, that's what I was just going to say, is how long ago was it that someone who was schizophrenic, they probably looked at him and said, oh, he must be possessed, you know, burn him at the stake or beat him with a club, you know?
You know, and, yeah, I've seen from a lot of groups who've gone to some of these places, and they've captured some evidence. I guess, think of it like this, you know, what came first, the chicken or the egg? You know, what came first, the thought of it being haunted or the experiences of the haunting?
Yeah. Is it haunted because you wanted it to be and you called something in? You know, I've spoke with some psychics who say, you know, any place can be haunted. Spirits can be anywheres if you open yourself up to them. Well, you just happen to open yourself up more when you're walking through a spooky house and expecting it to happen. But if you walk down the main street at noon in your town And if you had that same expectation and you were open to the experience, then it could possibly happen right there just as well.
Right. And that, I that's really the great, you know, like I just said. What came first? The haunting or its creepiness and people thinking it was going to be haunted? Going into it, on edge to begin with, and every little bump, crack, and sound that they heard was a ghost, and the next thing you know, that old creepy Johnson building down the street, that must be haunted. I heard a bump in there, you know? Yeah, I think, and again, this time of year, you're falling into it more than anything else. Look at it. It must be haunted. Let's go look for it.
Well, that's like I said, I can't wait to get back down to the mansion because, I've heard everyone talk about it. I've been in there one time, but I can't honestly say that, I got a couple EVPs, but other than that, I still haven't gotten my conclusive proof that I want where I can agree with everybody else.
Right. And That's the tricky part. Yeah, I mean, I first started out, I was lucky, I guess, I started out in a haunted building, and it's still there all the time, and there was nothing like the first time, I'm with another investigator, and I'm just, normal, not really a non-believer, but not a believer. I just kind of was in between, kind of like where you were, a little while ago, and having them say, I think there's something there, there's a cold spot, and then just putting my hand out and feeling that cold. And then thinking to myself in the back of my head, I'm touching a ghost. It's weird to think of it in your head, like, wow, I'm touching a ghost. That's weird.
Well, a lot of that's your frame of mind, too. A skeptic could be sitting there saying, I'm touching a cold spot. Big deal.
Yeah, that's just how it goes. Oh, let's see, where are we on time now? We got about 15 minutes to go here, and we'll next week I might have a guest. I'm gonna have Steve come on, as long as his schedule doesn't get backed up on us again like it did last time. He said he has an open schedule now, so next Sunday he should be able to do it. And then the following week after that, we got the day after Halloween. That's going to be a lot of fun. I think I'm going to get together some ghost stories for the show a little bit, because what's Halloween without hearing some ghost stories, for one thing?
Really? I'll have to dig out Mark Nesbitt's book here. I got three of them laying around here somewhere.
And then after that, I'm going to hopefully get some, at least little, 15-minute interviews with Dustin Perry and Chris Williams. I'll see if I can bother them for a little bit and kind of do a formal chat with them with a recorder and see if we can get that out over the blog talk waves without too many technical difficulties.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah, I'd love to hear from that. I see Dustin pop up on Facebook every now and then, and he's Brian's putting together some new national paranormal team. I'm not quite sure what that's all about yet.
Yeah, I saw it. That was actually weird. He actually asked me to be his friend. That was the first time I had somebody remotely popular ask me to be their friend. And
I had that today. Hans Holzer's daughter asked me today.
Oh, really? That's weird. She didn't even ask me. No, I'm insulted.
Eat your heart. It's got to be my profile pic.
That's right. Yeah, it must be. Speaking of that, we always bring it up. You want to learn Han Holzer's book, Ghosts. I'm looking at it across the room. It's about 2.5 inches thick. But let me tell you, I learned more sitting down and reading through that book, I think, than I did any other book. Absolutely worth the while. You go get that one. Simply just Ghosts, right along the side of it. A a lot to learn out of that one. Hans Holzer was really one of the founding fathers of the paranormal research study and paranormal investigating, and he did a lot of great work for this field.
Yeah, and his daughter, Alexandra, actually wrote a book. I just saw it today. It's called Growing Up Haunted. So I don't know if that's any good or not, but I have to check that out.
Yeah, we'll have to see if we can get her on the show. I know the guy who does a lot of her bookings and stuff for that for conferences. We'll have to see if she'd be willing to come on and give us a little interview. That, you know, that would be interesting to hear. You know, that's kind of how John Zaffis was brought up. You know, learning from not his parents but his aunt and uncle, the Warrens. You know, who are another kind of founding fathers of the paranormal investigative world. You know, they were the ones that had investigated the Amityville house, the real Amityville house, not the movie. They were the ones that investigated the house the movie was based on. He kind of grew up following that. It'd be interesting to get that perspective, you know, where you picked on in school because you have that crazy dad who looks for ghosts. I mean, I don't know, you know, my kids don't get it, but I'm not, a famous author either, or as big in the field as, say, someone like that was.
Your kids probably don't get it because they don't even mention their father to anybody.
Oh, now that's just mean.
Yeah, I just couldn't help it. Oh. Anyways, I thought it was funny. I didn't realize Lorraine and Warren was his aunt.
Yep, that was his aunt and uncle. And he had, he as a kid would tag along with them, on their investigations. He actually was at the Amityville house for a couple of investigations, I believe. And that's a great way to learn. And at the same time, now, it's going to bring up an argument here now, or an argument on something we always talk about. We always talk about how kids are always born with the psychic ability, and it's kind of beaten out of them, it was just your imaginary friend, it's not real, and it's suppressed down. Now, someone like that, you would think it would have been in a household or an environment where maybe the ability wasn't so much nurtured, but not so much suppressed. Yeah, you don't see her as, say, maybe being someone who is claimed to be overly psychic and have those abilities.
True. I never thought about that. I wonder if it's because she's never looked for him, never went down, chose to go down a different path and never attempted to develop any abilities or test them or maybe that's true. Because you would think one of the foremost demonologists that there is would be around it their whole life, basically. If anybody's going to be psychic, they would.
Right. Well, getting a little short on time. I wanted to plug a couple more, one more time. The night before Halloween, October 30th, the Houghton Mansion will be hosting Dustin Perry along with Cece the Huntress for a live investigation with them. You'll get a presentation. You'll walk through the tours of the building with the lights on, and then we let you cut loose and investigate for yourself. They're only selling 50 tickets. I believe they're still on sale. I haven't been told they're sold out yet, and I usually get called right when they do sell out, and they generally do. These events always get sold out, so definitely you should, if you want to go, get your tickets now. They can be bought through Ideal Event Management. Ideal Event Management, it's oh my God, I forgot their webpage. IdealEventManage.com.
Slash Houghton.html.
Is it? Oh, yeah. So I don't know if you want to go right to it. And from there, you can purchase your tickets. And they're a lot of fun. I can never have enough about it. And also, their candy and all that happy stuff, I think I might open up the doors to the Houghton Mansion and tell all the people who've been begging and bugging me for tours to come on down 9 o'clock on Halloween night, and at, you know, maybe 9:30, come down. We'll give you a little presentation about the place and maybe break out a little bit of equipment and do some walking around and kind of a more expanded, detailed tour that you wouldn't normally get with the quick little 1.5-2 hour ones that we would normally do for private bookings. That and
had a thought. I think it would be fun for a bunch of us to go in the mansion and each take a window facing the street and just wait for the little kids to come along looking for their candy and just pop up every now and then.
Oh, I've done that. Believe me, this has been a few times where I've gone down at night and a little bit more bored and then investigating and out in the windows with like a camera or something, and when someone walks by, like set off the flash on the camera or shine
or
the flashlight out.
Yeah, walk from room to room with a candle or something.
And you know, it's amazing, especially the college kids. There's always college kids walking by and, you know, turning their heads and trying to get a peek in at a ghost, and the looks on their faces are absolutely priceless.
Well, there's a cemetery up here in Bennington that's reputed to be haunted, and I've thought many times of putting on my Civil War reenactor's uniform and just about 11 o'clock at night and just step out of the bushes as cars go by or something and see if I wind up on the front page the next day.
There you go. You'll be the next old coot in the mountain from Mount Greylock there. Yeah, he was a famous, every year they had a picture of him walking out of the woods, and those are all rigged, but it was a good story at the same time. The, a lot of people still ask, if we're still doing it. We are still going to do something at the Equinox. I'm still, debating within my head the dates that I want to do it. Anybody who has an opinion, you know, would you rather go up to, southern Vermont in early March or late March or mid-April? Yeah, drop me an email and say, this week's better for me, and maybe I'll probably take that into consideration and go for it. The lineup isn't set, but I'm going to have a lot more leeway and a contract signed well before the lineup is even set. And from there, I plan on making this a lot more attractive and a lot more fun than the original one that I had planned. It's going to be an easier time of year to book these people. So that's another little way into consideration, obviously, who I can get on a different weekends. But, you know, I'm going to get some bigger names. I'm going to probably get the same names I had before. I'm going to get some bigger ones. I want this to be one of the biggest paranormal events of the year, you know, for anybody to go to. So, you know, be thinking early spring, and that you're going to want to be taking a trip up to good old southern Vermont. And well, for you, Al, it's not a trip, it's just a drive up the road. Oh no, we lost him in the last 8 minutes of the show, didn't we? Al is gone. The spirits from the haunted cemetery came and got him. They must have heard him talking about getting in a Civil War uniform and were offended and said they didn't want to do it, so they got rid of him now on us, didn't they? but anyways, I suppose I can blab for the next 5 minutes and get off the show if Al doesn't get back in. Thanks for everybody who is listening, who has tuned in and came in on a regular basis to listen to us. We're definitely not the normal paranormal show. We bounce around from subject to subject, but hopefully those of you who have listened have learned a thing or two from us and are bantering back and forth. I try to make it an effort to make it, you know, a debatable subject every now and then. Especially, you know, today I purposely had to bring up the specialist topic because I think in anything, especially when we're talking about the paranormal, there are so many different views and aspects and opinions that two like-minded people who do nothing but agree with each other on every topic talking for 2 hours would be boring. I think, you know, we got that contrasting views, and even sometimes I will debate the side that I even don't agree with just for the topic of debate. Oh, I hear Al popping back in.
I think that's 2 weeks now, 5 minutes before the end of the show, it kicks me out.
Oh, that's good. I only had to talk for like 2 minutes.
Yeah, I was going to say that I can remember 2 years in particular where here in Vermont it snowed about a foot on April 15th. So you might want to even think a little later.
Yeah, well, you never know. Hey, it's snowing now. Well, not right now, but it was earlier, and it's supposed to snow some more tonight. So who knows? It's New England, and hey, if we didn't like a move, I guess.
I would if I could. All I need is another 25 people to see the extreme benefit in joining me in send-out cards, and then I could go to the beach. So,
there you go.
The Netflix of the greeting card industry, yes.
So, yep, Equinox is still going to happen. A lot of fun. Thank you again for everybody who's listening. I wasn't in the chat room tonight. My name is in there, but I think that's it. Yeah, I'm glad to see that, you know, even, you know, a couple people are tuning in every now and listening. I know we have some direct competition in the paranormal-related shows right on Blog Talk. At the same time, we have one show that starts an hour before us and runs in our first hour, and I think Gemini Rose, a friend of ours, and she starts the show at our halfway point and goes for an extra hour afterwards, so.
Yeah, and she's a lot cuter than we are, so. I mean, if she ever goes to TV, we're in trouble.
Speak for yourself.
But, yeah, definitely. It seems like every week I'm seeing a new name or two popping in the chat room. Peyote74 is in there right now. Want to thank them for coming by and hope they'll come back next week. We're not always just here rambling on, the two of us. We do have some cool guests. Like last week we had Mark Nesbitt, author of Ghosts of Gettysburg, and we've had a few different psychics on here, and we've had Michael Baker and Ron Kolick and a couple guys from the Monroe Institute. We've had a whole bunch. So, and I've got my eye on a few other guests too. So, I'm not afraid to ask them. I bypass agents. I just contact them directly. Say, hey, want to get on the phone for an hour?
Yeah, and I think we mix it up just right. Guests every couple weeks, but. One thing I did notice, I haven't checked our stats in a couple weeks, but it seems sometimes our most listeners actually came on the nights, and we did kind of banter back and forth with a debate about something as stupid as the name specialist or some random topic. Some of those are actually more of our most listened shows opposed to the ones where we actually had the bigger guests.
Yeah, it seems like it's always the show we have the most technical problems, seems like, too. But anyways, it's time to get out of here, and we'll be back next week, 7 o'clock Eastern Time, right here at Blog Talk Radio. So, goodbye, Josh.
See ya.